Hi, I'm Magda.
And I'm Katie, your co-host.
How We Built Our Team is a podcast that talks to successful founders and leaders in the hiring and recruiting space to learn their strategies for building and scaling their teams.
From attracting and impressing top talent to creating a strong company culture, our guests will share their insights and experience on what it takes to build your dream team.
In today's episode, we talk to Kaivan Wadia, co-founder and CTO of Coverforce. Prior to that, he was an engineering leader at Amazon, leading the first prototype model for advertising localization. We dived into what culture actually means and how to develop engineers, what questions to ask in interviews, how to assess for non-technical skills, and how to iterate on your hiring process over time. This conversation was awesome, and Kaivan is a really funny, direct guy, so his advice is incredibly tactical, not sugar-coated, and exactly what you need to hear if you're thinking about hiring engineers this year or in the coming year. Stay tuned.
Welcome, Kaivan, to How We Built Our Team. We're super excited to have you. I know that you have a lot of experience in a lot of different contexts across tech. You kickstarted your career at a gaming startup, then you got your master's at UT Austin, then joined Amazon, spending 5.5 years there, shaping the launch of Amazon Business, establishing an amazing team in New York City focused on advertising localization. And with his leadership, the team grew from one single engineer to a group of 15 to 20 members, earning a patent pending for their quality translation detection system, which is super impressive. And then in late 2021, he co-founded Coverforce, which is a company bridging the gap between independent insurance agents and carriers. So welcome, Kaivan.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
And I'm also welcomed by my co-host, Katie, who heads up BizOps and marketing at Dover as well. So let's just dive right in. I'd love to hear a bit about your journey from Amazon to being a co-founder. What made you decide to make that jump from like a big fan company to, you know, founding your own startup?
I think, like you mentioned, I used to work in startups even before I worked at Amazon. So startups are always something I liked. I think I'm always passionate about like having high intensity at work and having like 10 things to do. The reason I moved to Amazon was I just wanted to see how do you scale for like 10,000 engineers, and like startups have a customer scaling problem that's all across tech, but how do you scale when you're building a product that's being worked on by thousands of people? And I think I stuck around because Amazon does have a little bit of startup culture in terms of how it's structured with the two pizza teams and like you each team making their own decisions, no need to get approvals. So that kind of culture was always there, and I think that's why I stuck around. It was intense. There was always 10, 15 things to do. Thankfully, I was not in one of those really crazy teams which you hear about at Amazon, but yeah. Then Cyrus, I'm kind of the co-founder of Coverforce, but I think of it more as Cyrus founded Coverforce, and then I joined him and kind of co-founded the tech side a year later. So Cyrus started this out of, like, he was doing his MBA at Wharton, and this idea was something he started while he was at Wharton. And I used to always talk to him. We've grown up together, just full disclosure, we're kind of related. And with that in mind, I used to always help him from the tech side, advise him and kind of think it out, like, how would this work? How would this not work? What's possible? What's not possible, given time frames? And then I think in mid-2021, using a contract team, we built out kind of a POC. And I was just helping guide the contract team and stuff. And at that point, we had a customer who said, yeah, I'll use this if you build it out properly and stuff. And then that's when kind of we decided, okay, Cyrus decided he had to figure out, like, how do you fund this, right? And I think looking around at that time, it was also like what I call the summer of love in terms of investing. I wouldn't say it was easy to get money, but at least VCs were way more willing to invest compared to now. And in that sense, he decided, okay, I'm going to go out. And then he said, I need a technical co-founder at that point. Like, I'm going to be sitting in these pitches and they're going to be asking me tech questions, which I can't answer. So I said, yeah, I'll sit in with you and we'll do it. And so it was kind of like a slow burn over 6 months, right? I don't think we ever actually discussed me joining him as like, are you like, do you want to join or not? And I think it was just like, because I'd been helping him and like I knew, like he knew my basic restriction was visa, and like till we get funded, you can't really sponsor the visa. And so once he got funded, it was just like, okay, when are you resigning? And like it just kind of, the ball just kept rolling, I guess.
That's awesome. As the CTO of CoverForce, what was it like to then go in and build a technical org from the ground up?
Yeah, I think it's exhilarating, I would say. It's daunting, challenging. It's a lot of fun, a lot of scary days too, right? Some of the main challenges is you come in with, like, I'd worked at startups before and done hiring, but I think those were more mature startups, right? Like, when you're starting, we had a small contract team, but we knew that now with funding, we want to build our own team and kind of start again from scratch. For us, I think I joined in Jan, and the next few months was just figuring out, okay, how do you build, right? And we tried to use our network to hire first. Like, obviously, I was in the US, I'd just left Amazon, so I was looking at my team as like a potential sourcing strategy. And it was actually successful. Like, we had two people who were kind of ready to join, but then Amazon at that point came out with their announcement that they're going to raise salaries and stuff like that. So that completely flopped. So then at that point, we just shifted strategy, right? To like, okay, why not hire in India? And like, so that was something new. I think that was very challenging, right? Because now there was no network to rely on. Then there's the usual challenges which you come up when you're starting a completely new team from scratch at a small company is, what are you looking for, right? When you're in big tech or a big company, you already have a lot of structure in terms of, these are the things we're looking for in an interview. You already have the interview process lined up. You can't really copy paste all of that, because like any big tech company is going to have like 5 or 6 interviews. You can't necessarily spend that much time, right? We are like 3 people at that point. So spending that much time is not really optimal, but at the same time, the cost of your decision is way higher, right? Like, for a big tech company, having a mishire is, like I say, you're not in a very big engine, right? Whereas here you are literally part of the engine. Like, you are the engine. If we mishire, the engine splutters, right? I guess the main challenges there were in regards to kind of figuring out our interview process, figuring out what do you want to look for? Like, how do you really assess a candidate? I always knew, for me, it wasn't just technical skills. Amazon calls it leadership principles. Others call it cultural fit or like values, different things. And for me, it was always like, we need to focus a lot on that, because you need people who are technically strong, but have these what you would call non-technical qualities, right? Like good communication, ownership, the ability to kind of deal with ambiguity, things like that. And also, like, at that time, there was a third person in the company, and it was also about like working with them to kind of make them understand and iterate together, how do we test for this, right? How do we extract this data is one of like the biggest challenges.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think what it sounds like is you were looking for somebody who could help you build the culture from the ground up, as well as, you know, build out this team. So I'm curious to hear from your perspective as a CTO. Obviously, you came from a culture that was pretty well defined. How did you think about culture? You mentioned leadership principles, but what were some of the other things that you were looking for? And how did you tactically measure those things in the interview process?
You rely a lot on prior experience, right? And this is what I tell a lot of people who now interview at CoverForce is, your goal is not to put them under pressure. Your goal is to extract data, right? So with that in mind, I guess for me, the first step was defining what you want. What do you want as culture? And my thing was, it's way too early to put down a whole cultural deck or anything like that, or a cultural document. And my basic thing was, I want to look for people who are comfortable dealing with ambiguity, because that's going to be huge at a startup. You should be okay with picking up whatever task is assigned to you, right? Your main role might be engineer, but one day you might just be doing Excel sheet manipulation, because that's what we need. Right? You might have to learn Excel. And one day you might have to do something else. And people should be comfortable with that and value that work, right? Like, value their output. I think sometimes people don't value that output. So dealing with ambiguity, ownership, and kind of deliver results, right? Like, when you're in the middle of a project, priorities change, your solution doesn't work out, feature creep, scope creep, how do you deal with all of that and still deliver? Or do you get bogged down and, you know, get demotivated, right? So I think those three are very critical in my view. And like an overarching theme there would also be communication, right? When you're delivering results and you're dealing with ambiguity, if you can't communicate well, that's going to be a roadblock. I think we are way too young to start putting down like a cultural document, right? We have certain things that we throw around internally and you can see that's organically going to happen, but I don't want to like force it. I'm a big believer in like, let the team organically develop this. So then once we define that, I guess the next part is how do you test for it, right? In terms of leadership principles, you rely a lot on, especially for ownership and deliver results, we rely a lot on past experience. Questions like, tell me about a time when you missed a deadline, right? How are you handling it? What we are looking for is, do you detect this early on? Do you communicate with stakeholders? When you communicate, are you just going in and saying, okay, this is going to be delayed, my hands are up, I walk out, like you tell me how to do this? Or do you come with potential solutions, even if that solution is just cutting scope, right? So a lot of that is what we look for. And same with ownership, right? Ownership, I have like this question many times I ask is, tell me about a time when you improved something in your team that wasn't part of your job, right? Or you discovered something, some issue or some feature that you wanted to build, convinced others to kind of fund it in some sense, like give you the time to build it, and then you built it out, right? I think that shows, do you really care, or are you just focused on your task and getting it done? I'm just going to go to someone and ask for a download of information. Or do you, like, that's a great strategy, right? Like, but that can't be 100% of your strategy. You have to do some research on your own and stuff like that. I think dealing with ambiguity is a little bit different, because it kind of flows into a little bit of, tell me about a time when you had to learn something new. But at the same time, that's a good question that marries well with one of the technical questions we ask. Like, we do a lot of system design stuff. And when we ask system design, we purposely hold back information. We want to enable them to ask for and figure out, and let them figure out where this potential design is going to go. Many people who join have only done interviews from a technical perspective. That is purely asking technical questions. So it takes time to figure out how to ask these questions. They don't know what questions to ask to assess. So we give them the question bank. Even after you give them a question bank, they'll ask the question and they'll just like write down everything the interviewee has said, right? When actually what you want is, you want to ask follow-up questions. You really want to dive deep on certain parts, right? Now, taking the example of deliver results and a missed deadline, someone might not tell you about how they communicated. Doesn't mean they didn't communicate, right? You might have to ask them, hey, who did you tell? When did you tell? And I think that's one of the other tricky parts, is you have to get the interviewer to switch their kind of mindset from being just a asker of questions to being a data extractor. You have to really go in and extract that data from candidates, right? And not assume that because they haven't, they did not meet the bar.
Yeah, what are some of the kind of strategies or techniques that you use with your interviewers at your team to kind of create this positive interviewing experience, but still making sure that you are correctly gathering the data in, let's say, that 30-minute interview?
Firstly, we do like 60-minute interviews, but yeah, the non-technical part, we probably limit to 30 minutes. I think in terms of how do we help interviewers is, I kind of sit and really explain like what I do. And like one of the other things we do a lot is after the debrief, where we kind of debrief about the interview, we kind of ask at times like, what were some of the problems you faced? Because each candidate also is different. You have people who are very verbose. You have people who are very kind of shy or reluctant to express the entire project that they did. One thing we've now started is a shadowing program to shadow each other so that you can give some kind of feedback. We haven't yet figured out the best way to do that. Obviously, we do get some candid feedback sometimes from candidates, and that's great, right? Like in terms of like, hey, this happened in the interview and stuff like that. And we iterate on that for sure, but we haven't yet figured out how to kind of collect candidate feedback very well.
I think that's a really natural step that a lot of startups, at least we've experienced that on Dover's side from the recruiting standpoint. The feedback from candidates feels to be almost like a missing part that people tend to forget about. It's like, oh yeah, we'll give them feedback, but wait, they should also be telling us how we can improve. Pivoting a little bit slightly, but you mentioned that you started to scale the team externally outside of your own network. So I'm curious to hear about what you think are the differences between hiring externally and internally. What shifted really significantly in CoverForce when you made that change?
Like, I would have loved to hire within the network, right? But once we decided that we are hiring in India, my network, like, even though I grew up in India, but I've been here for the last 8 years and most of my career is here. So in terms of my network back home is family and friends that do not work in engineering at all. So that's not going to help much. I think the main challenge is you go straight into kind of like a big tech challenge, right? That is, you're trying to recruit. Nobody knows your company. You're trying to go write out cold emails, right? Cold message people. And you don't have a big name behind you. Right? When you're using your network, there's kind of a warm introduction that helps you a lot, right? Sourcing and funneling is the main challenge. Like, sourcing goes into two parts, right? One is outbound and inbound. I think outbound is a huge challenge for a startup. It sounds bad to say, but like, in inbound candidates, if you have 100 inbound candidates, probably 10 are worth, 10 are the ones you're actually looking for, right? So you're doing a lot of filtering, and that's where like the funneling piece comes in. But from a sourcing perspective, outbound is so critical, because if you want to reach out to someone, that means you already feel they like theoretically meet the bar, right?
Yeah. What are some of the ways that you guys have solved for that challenge, sourcing from a different country and probably having to, you know, change your approach and the questions you ask candidates?
Early on, we tried the traditional recruiter route, like third-party recruiters. We tried a dedicated kind of jobs platform. And what I mean by dedicated jobs platform is where people who are looking for jobs also sign up to that platform. I think that didn't work out because it's kind of the same thing. It's just another form of inbound, right? If someone is signing up and there is no curation there, it's probably you're getting like anyone and everyone, right? And then kind of used over, right? I think, to be honest, our strategy now is just over. Right, because that works and that's it, right? I think it solves the problem for us. I think that's like an ideal sourcing strategy for us.
As you're building this kind of very global remote team, what are some tips or strategies that you've used to keep that fully remote team engaged to promote collaboration and build this environment of psychological safety that allows for people to come up with new ideas and feel safe to fail so you can move forward as a business?
To be honest, in terms of engagement, there's obviously a lot of work-related engagement, but social engagement is something we as a company also are trying to figure out, right, in a completely remote setting. It's completely remote plus like split globally. As one of the co-founders, I think it's very important for me to make sure they are engaged with me because that makes them feel engaged with the company. And so I do a lot of regular one-on-ones, and I think that's a big commitment for me is do that, but that's not scalable, right? Like, you can't expect everyone to do one-on-ones with everyone regularly because then you'd just have 4 hours, 5 hours spent on that. So I think there we do a lot of group activities. Finally, we've also realized that maybe this is something you can bring in someone else, right? Instead of thinking of, you know, like, what activities do? So we do like a weekly game night, but we try to do an activity every 2 or 3 months. Just bring in someone else who does this and forces us to do it, right? Like, that makes us accountable. So that's kind of the strategy from an engagement side. From an ownership and giving people the flexibility to experiment and kind of explore, I think this starts right at the interview stage, right? When you like have that discussion, you want that discussion to be completely open and free. You want them to be able to tell you their raw thoughts of how they are solving the problem and not express any like dissatisfaction with it or saying this is wrong or things like that. So it starts right there. I think then post the interview, Cyrus and me usually both talk to them. There we express, like I said, we don't have a cultural deck yet or a cultural document, but like my focus is a lot on, like, I think I'm very influenced by both Amazon and Netflix. I think we believe a lot in radical openness, right? I call it brutal honesty at times. And the idea being that, yes, sometimes that honesty also will come with like criticism, like you're going to get critical feedback, but you have to know it comes from a place of goodness, not from a place of I'm trying to be mean or this. It's coming from a place that we want this company to succeed so that everyone succeeds, right? I think I'm very open. I call out my own mistakes many times. As a leader, you have to set that right from the top. Early on, I'd written a lot of the code base, and you know, like, there are bugs now that obviously are mine, originally. And I would say, yeah, this is my fault. This is what I was thinking at the time. And, you know, do like a mini retro almost and kind of encourage people that it's okay to make mistakes. And at the same time, be involved, but not take over decision power, right? Like, I think I'm still very involved in almost every project that's running. I know the nitty-gritty, but I never take over decision power. Many times when people join, I also notice they'll come up with a solution and they'll be like, okay, these are three possible solutions. What do you think? You have to force them and say, no, what do you think? I am here to just figure out if what you think is okay as a second eye, right? I want you to make the decision, and I'll only say otherwise if I think there's something glaringly wrong with it or like it won't succeed, right? And then also I'll like try to ask questions in a way that they come to that, so they come to that decision, right, or realization. The other thing for us is very crucial is ownership. That ownership could be kind of the freedom to experiment, freedom to figure out a solution and implement the solution you want. With that ownership comes a lot of responsibility, right? And sometimes that's where the interview process is so, so important. Like, you could have people who are technically very capable. When you give them ownership, they might, and freedom, they might misuse it, right? So that is so, so important. And that goes back to brutal honesty. When you misuse the ownership and freedom, we kind of call it out that, hey, this was not the right thing to do.
On the note of ownership, I know you've told us before that you made this evolution from a contract team to full-time team, especially on the Inch side. So what were some of the challenges or lessons learned during that transition? And how did that impact your team?
There's a huge ownership difference, right? When you're a contract team versus like, that's the first like big difference because you're working directly for a company. Besides that, I think I wouldn't say necessarily like the contract team doesn't have ownership, right? People can value their work no matter what. I think the other big challenge for us, basically we hired early on quite a few, right? Last year, like mid last year, we started scaling up our team directly with CoverForce, and then we kind of stopped it, right? I think one of the things I learned is having a team is a continuous build. You shouldn't be like, okay, this is the team I need for now. And I think that's the hole we fell into. I think we stopped hiring, I want to say July or September last year. We basically were like, okay, this is what we need to get us to our first version of the product and start giving it out to customers. And we gave it out to customers a month and a half ago. And obviously it was received well, but like there's so many things you have to do immediately, right? And now we are trying to ramp up our pipeline and it's like cold starting the entire thing. And on top of it, like this is something unique to India, right? Is India has huge notice periods, right? The average notice period, I would say, is 2 months. So that becomes a huge problem, not only because first it's cold starting your pipeline to have candidates. Then once they accept, it's 2 months till they join. Then there's another problem. Now they have 2 months where they can potentially interview with anyone else, right? Early on last year, we had candidates who were like, yes, we will join. And on the joining date, they didn't show up. So we had to figure out what were some of the ways to increase engagement or at least keep them engaged for that 2 month period and at least know if they are planning not to join, right? So we figured that halfway through, we should actually send them a laptop, let them start setting them up, because that's a whole other level of, oh, now if I switch, I have to send back the laptop and, you know, I can't silent quit, right?
So yeah, right, exactly.
And then, you know, just keeping them engaged, like, hey, how's it going? Any questions? And when you ask them any questions, like just checking in, do you have any questions? They might not have any questions, but genuinely, but like, because I've asked them, they will ask me back something, right? Just to show, okay, they are engaged. Then we would send them reading material about the company and tell them some of the updates and stuff like that. So that was one way we figured out, like, how do you keep them engaged while it's like a 2 month long notice period, right?
Can you talk a little bit about the decision to stop hiring? And then obviously you mentioned that you learned from that experience that cold starting is like death for your hiring pipeline. So what sort of strategies have you guys enacted at CoverForce to sort of mediate that?
Yeah, I think we just cold started it a month and a half ago, right? I would say now the pipeline's getting going. And I guess the main learning is don't stop it. Keep it on a slow burn. We still have to figure out, obviously, we have a target in terms of how many people we'll hire. Once we hire that, what do you do when you say don't stop it? You can't keep it going and not hire. So we'll have to figure that out. And I think there, the idea is, I would say keep it going. Like the idea that's floating around in my head is keep it going. And if you find an exceptional candidate, make an exception, right? Like hire them. As long as you have faith that the company is going to grow, it's okay to hire them.
I'm curious how that works from like the candidate perspective. You know, people might be actively looking for roles. Do you change your messaging at all if it's more of like a, you know, oh, this person's really great sort of hire, just to kind of keep it fair to the candidate as well?
Yeah. And like one way is also to kind of increase the filters early on. You keep the role open. I think when you're trying to hire, like in general, you have a certain bar. But when you're just keeping it on, I guess, cruise control, you want to maybe raise that bar, right? So you still have everyone interviewing, but it's much less frequently, maybe once every 3 weeks or something like that. But people are still in the habit. The pipeline's there. The filters are running. Everything's happening, right? So it's just about maybe stopping the flow in the pipe, right? And then that automatically, again, gets you to potentially only exceptional candidates. Because we also don't want to have a situation necessarily where we are like, okay, we like this person, but they're not exceptional. Then it's just like, it's not the best thing to like go through the entire loop and then say, okay, like you can't even say like, we liked you, but we want to put you on a wait list. That's not a great message, right? So you would most likely say that, okay, we don't want to hire you. And then if you come back 6 months later and you're like, okay, now we want to hire you, that's not the best experience.
Yeah. So it's more about, you know, getting really, really targeted upfront, continuing to keep the door open, but being really super targeted and specific with your criteria.
Yep.
This has been a really amazing conversation in terms of diving into what the culture is like and how you very intentionally built that. Do you have any final thoughts or parting words that you would share with startup founders during kind of this tumultuous market?
That I think it's also an exciting market, right? And a difficult market. I feel like one of the things we felt early on when there were layoffs across the industry, we felt, okay, this might be an opportune time for us, right? It sounds bad, but it might be an opportune time for us to kind of get good talent. But it's not really necessarily worked out that way. And part of it might be just cold starting the pipeline, right? It might not necessarily be that. But part of it, I also think, is different cultures also, right? Like we hire in India where in a downturn, stability is regarded very highly. So people will be very reluctant to move. Even those who are laid off are probably very reluctant to join a US-based startup. You know, they're probably looking for something way more stable, things like that. So that's one thing. So with that in mind, for me, regardless of whether it's a downturn or not, for me, I'm always looking for people who are looking at long-term growth. And I'm very candid about it. A primary driving factor for you is going to be financial growth, right? Like, let's not sugarcoat it and say it like, oh, this, I'm very upfront and honest about it. So once that is out of the way, my usual question is like, okay, you believe that the financial growth is going to be good. What are you looking for? You might have great financial growth, but if you're unhappy, you're still going to be unhappy 10 years later, that 5-year period sucked. And so with that in mind, I'm always looking at people who think kind of a little bit long term, right? What do they want? Do you have an idea of what you want in terms of growth? Or are you looking at purely as this as a short term benefit? Like, I'll join till I find the next step up in salary or like compensation and things like that. And sometimes people are also looking for that, right? Like, they're like, I'm here maybe 2-3 years and then I'll try to start my own company or go to an even smaller stage company where I'm one of the first few. I'm like, that's great. If you're honest about it, great. If you've met the bar, it's like, I prefer that to be kind of honest and upfront. But that shows that they're owning what they want and then just being aligned, right, on that, like what they want, what you want. The other thing for me, I think from a tech perspective, is relinquishing control. Like I was telling you, like in decision making, I don't want to be involved, right? I want to relinquish control, but I still want to be in the know, because otherwise you become the bottleneck very, very very quickly. And you're not letting others grow, right? I think one of the main things in a startup is you want people to grow and take charge of heavy or big pieces. So I think that's another important aspect.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, I think that also comes from hiring people who are, you know, meeting your bar and are talented, so you trust them and can sort of let them do their own thing. Keyvan, this has been awesome. As Katie said, we have a few rapid fire questions that we ask all of our guests. My first question for you is, what is your favorite interview question? We sort of talked about a few, but do you have a favorite that you like to ask engineers?
I have two. One is just a general starting point, which is, tell me about the most complex project you worked on. It gives me a lot of, like, it gives me a huge breadth to explore, right? Like, do I want to dive deep into like what was complex and their communication, or how did they handle this and stuff like that? So I think that's number one. And I think the other one is a combination of, tell me when you had to learn something new or you did something outside your interest.
So the second question is, what is an all-time favorite book that you'd recommend?
Oh, all-time favorite. Recently, I read a lot about just building companies. And I think the two favorites right now are Creativity Inc. for Pixar and Ed Catmull. How do you keep creativity alive, right, as you grow as a company? That's their core thing, right? Like, you can't make movies without creativity. The other one, I guess you've guessed by now, is a lot about the Netflix culture. And like, there's... I forget the name of the book, but it's with Reed Hastings and someone else. I think it's called No Rules. Yeah, No Rules.
Awesome. Okay, third question. Where do you physically go in the world to spark inspiration, if there's a place that comes to mind?
Ooh. Yeah, I think just many times it's just a walk. Like, I live in New York, so it's a hustle and a bustle, I guess. Yeah, just go for a walk. I think Cyrus, my co-founder, and me, when we really want to like think of something, we sometimes go for a walk. It doesn't matter where, I think. It's just going and walking.
Yeah, that's awesome. Our last question is, what is something that you're really looking forward to right now?
Personally, we're planning a trip, a small vacation after a long time. So that, but otherwise, the next stage, right? I think we've just launched our product and that's kind of V1. We have 2-3 more products in the pipeline, and I think that's exciting. And I think to get that done, we're back to building the team. And I think for me personally, that's a great passion, is kind of seeing others grow and developing others. So I think that's the thing that'll keep me excited for the next few months.
Great. That's really exciting. Well, thank you so much, Keyvan. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
How We Built Our Team is produced by Dover, a recruiting operations platform that helps you attract and engage the best talent.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. See you next week.